is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. January 22nd marks 50 years since the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade. Back in 1973, attorney Sarah Weddington argued the case before nine men on the Supreme Court.
The case originated with the filing of the complaint. Jane Roe, the pregnant woman, had gone to several Dallas physicians seeking an abortion, but had been refused care because of the Texas law. She filed suit on behalf of herself and all those women who have in the past, at that present time, or in the future, would seek termination of a pregnancy.
In the decades following the landmark ruling, opponents of abortion worked to weaken the court's decision. They worked through state legislatures and courts across the nation. It all culminated 49 years after the passage of Roe v. Wade, when the Supreme Court issued a decision in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health last summer, overturning Roe. Opponents of abortion were elated.
This means everything. This is the moment that we have been working toward. This is a historic day. This is the first day that America is living in a post-Roe generation.
We are dancing on the grave of Roe versus Wade. It's like taking Normandy Beach, and we will get to Berlin. We will make it a crime in all 50 states.
And while a majority of Americans, about 53%, disapprove of the Supreme Court's most recent decision overturning the right to abortion, opponents of abortion look to shore up their position with their own 50-year commemoration. The Anti-Abortion March for Life, taking place this weekend in Washington, D.C. Also hoping to seize upon the momentum from the Dobbs decision, this week House Republicans passed a Born Alive bill. Now, it's a bill that would instantiate a requirement for healthcare providers to give life-saving measures to an infant born alive after an attempted abortion. It's an exceedingly rare occurrence. And similar measures on state ballots were rejected by voters during the 2022 midterms. The measure is also not expected to pass the Democratic-controlled Senate, but still, it's a strategic signal that the GOP will continue to seek ways to curtail abortion access through legislative action. It's a signal that we're also seeing out of the Tar Heel State. In North Carolina, Republicans sit on the cusp of a supermajority that would give them the power to override any veto handed down from Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. They've got their eyes set on abortion. They hope to peel off just a few Democratic votes needed to override a likely gubernatorial veto of an abortion restriction bill.
It's amazing how they're tossing around numbers of weeks when you're talking about women's reproductive freedom. I think North Carolina's law is strict enough.
Now, the governor has vowed to veto any abortion restrictions that reach his desk. But meanwhile, Republican Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is a vocal critic of abortion. And he shared in a sermon who he believes should be leading the charge in all things.
We're called to be the Christians that God has called us to be. And we are called to be led by men. God sent women out when he was supposed to do, when they had to do that thing. But when it was time to face down Goliath, sent David, not Davita, David. When it was time to lead the Israelites out of Israel, he sent Moses, not Mama Moses, Daddy Moses.
And North Carolina Democrats might be feeling like they're in a David versus Goliath situation. As the legislative session begins, protecting the right to abortion in the state will require deft political maneuvering. With me now is Representative Dr. Amber Baker, the North Carolina General Assembly. Representative Baker, thanks so much for joining us on The Takeaway.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, let me just start with a little bit of context here. Right now, Republicans hold majorities in both houses of the General Assembly. Can you talk to me a bit about sort of where the Democratic caucus is kind of politically, emotionally, strategically right now, how you all have been even thinking about a general approach to this session?
Well, actually, it started last session when we were trying to be forward thinking that we might be in this position that we're in now. And we began to talk about strategy and how we would hold the caucus together and to be able to support the governor's veto of any legislation that may come through. And as you know, we hold a one seat majority in terms of being able to hold the veto. So right now, you know, we're just strategizing on making sure that we hold the caucus together to be able to support and uphold the veto.
Right. So again, for folks who may not know, right, the governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, is a Democrat. The Senate has a supermajority of Republicans capable of overriding a veto. One seat short of a supermajority in the House where you serve. So now with the GA back in session, were you at all surprised to see abortion become this kind of leading issue, curtailing abortion rights as a starting issue in many ways for North Carolina Republicans?
They had signaled that this was going to be at the forefront of their agenda when we convened for the new session. So we're not surprised. I'm not surprised. They were very open about that. There were a number of things that they are striving to push forward. Abortion at the top of the list. Voter suppression is another one. Of course, the refusal to deal with Medicaid expansion, even though the speaker has given his word on a number of occasions that we would have had a vote on it in December. Before the last session closed out. So they've been very transparent about what they intend to do now that they have gained this power.
Now, right now, the state of North Carolina has a ban on abortion after 21 weeks. But the Republicans have introduced legislation to curtail abortion, pushing back to something like 12 or 13 weeks. Can you talk to me about your understanding of what what this bill entails?
So it is really about them just trying to control a woman's right to make the healthcare decisions around reproductive rights. The speaker has at one point been on record as supporting the 13-week ban. Now he has shifted back to a 6-week ban. So in true form, they are just inconsistent with being consistent. So we know that they're going to attack this. The exact strategy they're going to use is unclear. And I think the ambiguity is intentional.
Now, there's no ambiguity from the lieutenant governor here in the state. Robinson has suggested that as a 9 out of 10 children, that his own mother had been counseled potentially to terminate the pregnancy her 9th pregnancy. And he's talked about this as like this kind of deep moral issue for him. And he's saying specifically that there's this like targeting of poor and Black women for abortion services. Can you talk to me about the use of Black women, Black girls, and those living in poverty as this kind of tool of an abortion narrative from Republicans?
I've said to the lieutenant governor and to others, you cannot legislate morality. And so this idea that we tie reproductive rights to a moral issue and not a healthcare issue, again, is just misguided. You just cannot legislate morality. And women should have the right to make these decisions with their doctor and in consult with their mate around what is the best interest for them. And so it's ironic that men want to have these discussions around what women should do with their bodies, but there is never, ever a discussion about men having vasectomies and penalizing them for creating these pregnancies that may result in termination of the pregnancy.
All right, quick pause on this. We'll be right back with more from North Carolina State Representative Amber Baker right after this.
This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with psychologist Jonathan Haidt about his book, The Anxious Generation.
We're overprotecting in one place, and I'm saying, lighten up, let your kids out. And we're underprotecting another, and I'm saying, don't let your kids spend 9 hours a day on the internet talking with strange men. It's just not a good idea.
Jonathan Haidt on the New Yorker Radio Hour from WNYC Studios. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back with Dr. Amber Baker, representative in the North Carolina General Assembly. Given how slim this, you know, Democrats obviously in a minority, but having this slim, like, one seat to hold back from veto override, it means that in order to protect a gubernatorial veto, the whole caucus has to stay together. Do you think the whole Democratic caucus is going to hold on this one? Or are there reasons to think that there are Democrats likely to cross on this vote and vote for curtailing, for further curtailing abortion access in the state?
Well, I know that Minority Leader Reeves has really laid out a blueprint for continuing to hold us as a caucus. I think Speaker Moore was strategic by placing at least three Democrats as chairs or co-chairs on committees. I think he did that. This is just my personal belief, as a way of maybe trying to use that to sway those three individuals to break rank with the caucus. And so I trust my leader to be able to work together collaboratively to hold us together. We stood firm last session, even though we had a larger margin, but on the issues that counted, we did stay together. And I believe that those individuals will stand again on this issue, because North Carolinians have spoke, and this is not legislation that they want to see passed. And I think that that gives the individuals who feel like they may be in jeopardy of losing their seat, if they stand with what North Carolinians have said, then it's a win-win. And so overwhelmingly, North Carolinians have said this is not an issue that they want to see taken up.
North Carolina legislators noticed that if you go too far, you get more public pushback. And so, you know, this notion of 12 weeks or 13 weeks rather than six, at least initially, and having some carve outs for rape, for incest, for life of the mother. I'm wondering if those carve outs are enough to, again, potentially peel off one, two, three of these votes.
You know, I would like to be able to tell you that that wouldn't be enough, but it's just hard to say. I think that people, again, have held firm. I think they're trying to be strategic and finding the right balance to get this legislation passed. But I think that as a constituent of North Carolina, I think it's incumbent for them to call all of our legislators and know what they want. Let us know what they want. I think the pressure of individuals from all the counties will signal to the General Assembly that this is not something that they want. And so the voters have more power than they realize. And I think it's incumbent upon them to start now, writing, sending emails, sending letters, showing up in offices and letting all 120 of us know how they feel about it. And I think that that kind of pressure will help them to determine that this is not an issue that we need to move forward with.
Dr. Amber Baker, representative in the North Carolina General Assembly. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you for having me.